Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 129 of the Blazers Edge podcast, aka the Jerry Statcast, presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia.
And I'm your weekend co-host, Jerry Stackhouse's son, Brandon Goldner. If you want to get in touch with the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast, you can always shoot us an email at blazersedgepodcast@gmail.com. We would very much appreciate if you rate, review, and subscribe to us on both iTunes and Stitcher. And don't forget, we are now on YouTube.
Joining us this week on the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast is Blazers Edge staff writer Evans Clinchy. Evans, thanks for joining us on the show this week.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've had all kinds of trials and tribulations trying to get this week's episode set up. You know, going from having to, you know, try to figure out bandwidth and connection issues to trying to make sure everyone's updated on Skype, to having to retake the intro a number of different times. I mean, this week has been, it's been a heck of a time trying to get this show set up, but we're here. We're happy to be here, and we're stoked to be putting out this podcast with you, Evans. I want to talk about real quick. Obviously, we have the Blazers Clippers first round playoff matchup to talk about. But, you know, Wednesday night against the Nuggets, you know, I just want to touch on that real quick. It was a nice, you know, in my eyes, it was kind of a nice way to end the season. You know, after an 82 game grind, or I guess 81 games before that, with the last several weeks, you know, such a tight playoff race, not knowing where the Blazers would fall in the playoff seeds and who their opponent would be. You know, to have that wrapped up, you know, before the game started, with the Spurs beating the Mavs and securing the seeding for everybody. It was a nice little break, you know, to see the Blazers be able to come out there and not have to play Dame and CJ and the rest of the starters heavy minutes, and be able to see guys like, you know, Connaughton and Noah Vonleh get some extended court time, which, you know, I'm not expecting to really happen for them at any point this postseason unless there's a blowout in any direction. And we'll talk about the potential of that happening later on. But now, before the show, I was talking to Brandon, and he kind of had an interesting take on this kind of this Clippers series that we have upcoming. So I kind of want to kick it to you, Brandon, and hear, you know, how you think this series could potentially turn out for the Blazers against the Clippers.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always great to hear your opinion framed as an interesting take. My interesting take is that as you so artfully put it, is that the Blazers are going to win the series, and they're going to do it in seven games. I think on paper. Wow. And yeah. I think on paper and by most people's metrics, the Clippers should win. They definitely do have the advantage in many different areas, not least of which being their defense is much, much better than the Blazers. They, like the Blazers, have a very good offense, but they're much better defensively. They have some matchups against the Blazers that are going to cause Portland trouble, particularly the absence of Myers Leonard is definitely going to be felt in this series. I mean, you talk about someone you could throw at someone like DeAndre Jordan. It's going to be pretty scary seeing Plumlee try to manage him. It's going to be even scarier if the Blazers trot out the corpse of Chris Kaman for even single digit minutes. So that's not going to go too well, but yeah, no, I do think the Blazers are going to pull it out, and here's why. Resilience. The Blazers are one of the most mentally resilient teams in the league, and that's despite their inexperience and despite not having played together for very long. I mean, all three of us have seen the Blazers over the last couple of years. When they face adversity, they don't quit. They don't give up. I mean, and some people have even criticized Coach Stotts for not throwing in the towel earlier in certain situations when they're down big late and they keep pushing. And that has actually turned into some pretty memorable wins. I mean, last year, different team, but against OKC around Christmas time, I remember, I mean, they were dead in the water and they didn't give up. They came back and won that game. Examples abound, but I think the Blazers are going to win this. I think they're going to do it in seven games. And that is my interesting take.
So Evans, you know, we'll kind of explore, you know, potential ways that the Blazers, you know, could maybe take the Clippers in seven. I'm assuming that you may not even have this series going to seven games. What's your initial take on the onset of this series?
Yeah, I mean, my first instinct is to say Clippers in six. It's kind of a safe pick. I mean, either you're right or you're wrong, and you don't look that dumb because everybody else picked you too. I think Clippers in six is kind of the safe way to go. I think the Blazers have a chance in this series. I don't think it's utterly insane to say they'll win or anything, but I think they have to do everything right. They've really got to play pretty close to flawless basketball. I mean, like Brandon said, I mean, you're talking about a better defensive team and an equally excellent offensive team. I mean, you're not just talking about controlling Chris Paul, but you're talking about controlling the entire Clippers offensive attack. I mean, Paul is an incredible pick-and-roll playmaker. When he gets the ball and penetrates the lane, he's a threat to do so many things, whether it's drive and score, whether it's dropping into the lane for DeAndre for a dunk, whether it's kick it out to Paul Pierce in the corner for a three. And if you're just a split second late adjusting to whatever they throw your way, I mean, it's too late. They're already scoring on you. They're a really, really tough team to guard in every aspect of the game, whether it's mid-range, from three, at the rim, you name it. And so there's really just no room for error there. I mean, it's possible that the Blazers play flawless basketball four games out of seven and win. It's just going to be really, really tough. That's my take on it.
So I'm personally kind of split on this in my mind. I'm kind of on the fence. And my initial, reaction to this matchup is to say that, the Clippers they're at a point where it's kind of make or break for them. I think, pundits have been kind of saying this maybe the last couple of postseasons, where this is the chance, this is the time where they need to step up. How many times have they lost in the second round? Is it the last three seasons? And they've had health issues in the postseason. They've ran into some pretty good teams in the second round in the postseason. I've been reading, some of the Clippers blogs and some of the things that Clippers fans are discussing. And it kind of looks like, to me, it seems like they feel pretty confident about this matchup. And maybe that it's kind of a, the quote that I saw was that this was the easiest first round matchup that the Clippers have had in the playoffs the last several years. So maybe this will be a good opportunity for them to get out of the first round unscathed. So a lot of Clippers fans are looking at the Clippers to kind of just, maybe take this game or take this series in a gentleman's sweep, maybe kind of make pretty quick work of the Blazers. Now, I tend to agree in a number of ways, and we mentioned a number of reasons why the Clippers have advantages. And personally, I'm looking back and I'm thinking back to the 2013-14 season when I, predicted something along the lines of 45 wins and they got 54, and then the next season kind of, that amazing run that they had up until Wesley Matthews got injured. I don't know if anybody necessarily predicted that. This season, I think the majority, we know the way that the majority of people predicted this season to go, and we know how it's ended up. I mean, so at this point, I don't know if I want to bet against the Blazers. I mean, especially when they're undermatched. So I personally can't make up my mind on this one right now. Let's kind of explore this series a little bit and kind of dig into the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from the Clippers fans' perspective, I can definitely see why they have that overconfidence you're talking about. I mean, first of all, just look at the standings. I mean, it is a 4-5 matchup, but the 4-1-53 games and the 5-1-44, it's a 9-game gap, which is pretty significant. And also just, I mean, you talk about the Clippers having their easiest first-round matchup. I mean, if you look at the Clippers' recent history, that's true. I mean, last year they had that Clippers-Spurs first-round series, which was brutal. I mean, they shouldn't have gotten the Spurs in the first round. That's insane. A year before that, they played the Warriors, which was a really, really tough series. I mean, this is probably the easiest first-round matchup they've had. I think that's true. Having said that, I mean, I don't think the Blazers are an ordinary 44-win team. I mean, you look at how they started the season and how they ended it. They've been on a run since about New Year's that's a lot better than a 44-win team. I mean, if you take away those first couple months where they were kind of rocky, this is more like a 50-win pace kind of basketball team. So the Blazers are a really tough matchup if you look at it just how they've been the last 3 months or so. But yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers, they're looking at a team that's young, that's inexperienced, and that has one of the weaker defenses they face in the postseason. And that's enough reason to say, yeah, maybe they are favorites.
And yeah, just to play devil's advocate against my own argument and to agree with you a little bit, our own,
please do.
Yeah, exactly. our own longtime Blazers Edge moderator, he does a lot of stuff behind the scenes, Timay on Twitter, tweeted out that since 2000, those 44 wins that Portland got, they would get seeded between 8th and 10th every single year since 2000, except this year they're 5th. So, I mean, clearly the West has been super, super wonky. Lots of people have said this tons of times. Nobody really picked the Blazers to make the playoffs. And I don't think anyone could have anticipated the relative collapses of all of these teams that a lot of people expected to be either just as good as they were last year or quite a bit better. You think about the Rockets, you think about the Pelicans, you think about the Jazz had some injury problems. You can go up and down the list. And here's the thing, though. Like, it's tough for me to look at what other Clippers fans are saying and to really understand where they're coming from. I mean, I listened to a podcast. It's called Clipcast with Chris Wilde and Mike Jaglin out of Los Angeles. It's a great podcast. You should listen to it. But some of the things they were saying they have to finish the Blazers early. You know, they have to not let the series get to seven games. They said it would be a great warm-up for Golden State. I mean, they were treating this as a foregone conclusion that the Clippers were going to win this series. And I just don't see it. Like, it's tough for me to understand how you can hear, you know, well, maybe the Rockets will pick up a game against the Warriors. And in the same breath, folks are saying, well, the Blazers are probably, you know, going to have the gentleman sweep. Like, really? Like, the Blazers have the same chance of winning one game against the Clippers that the Rockets do against the Warriors? I don't think so.
Yeah, and it's especially a bad attitude to have when you're a fan of the Clippers and you look at what the Clippers did last year. I mean, they were up 3-1 on the Rockets in that second round series. They were up, I believe, 19 points in the fourth quarter in game six and couldn't close that one out. They blew game seven at home, I believe. I mean, it's just everything the Clippers have been through the last few years. They've been labeled as playoff chokers so many times. I mean, the way they lost to the Thunder the previous year was embarrassing, too. The Clippers are the last team you should expect to be overconfident going into this series. But maybe that's just their fans talking and not the team themselves.
Also, I mean, if you're a Clippers fan, you look at the history of this franchise. They've been to the playoffs 12 times. That includes when they used to be in San Diego, right? They have never been out of the second round, ever. And they have a team that they fought really, really hard to keep together because they thought they could make a push to the Western Conference Finals. They worked so hard to keep this team together that they sent their players over to capture DeAndre Jordan so he couldn't sign with the Mavericks. I mean, they clearly think that this is their time, that they have a window open now, which they do, and that's fair. So I mean, I can see why they would be confident, but yeah, it's tough for me to see how you could overlook this Blazers team, and I'm not trying not to be too much a fan about it, but it's hard for me to understand.
Well, let's start out, and I want to break down any number of factors that could swing either way in this series. I mean, you know, that Chris Paul Damian Lillard matchup is gonna be incredibly important. Blake Griffin's health, how he performs against the Blazers, and how they decide to take care of him should he be effective in the first couple of games. That's gonna be really important in the way that this series swings. You know, the Blazers rebounding advantage, DeAndre Jordan's free throw issues. I mean, there's Doc Rivers versus Terry Stotts. There's all kind of things that could, you know, swing this series one way or the other. But Brandon, to your point early on about how you think the Blazers could potentially win this, let's just talk a little bit about some of the intangibles here first off. You know, things that you can't, you know, maybe necessarily quantify. I'm looking at this Blazers team, and I know that early on in the season, I think it was about August or September, we started hearing all about that San Diego trip that they had gone on. And it seemed to like make the rounds quite a bit and get referenced quite a bit. And it was kind of this talking point from, you know, the fans, people covering the team. Even the team was talking about, you know, the camaraderie they had and how it was so important that they had all gotten together so early on. And then during the course of the season, you know, you see the resilience that this team had. You know, they were, what, five games under 500 around Christmas time. The way they turned it around to get to 44 wins this season, I mean, that is absolutely magnificent. You know, Damian Lillard ended up missing a handful of games this season. Myers Leonard ended up being out of the rotation entirely at the end of the season. He was an important part of that rotation. I mean, the way that these guys have able to kind of put together this, what appeared to be a patchwork lineup at the beginning of the season, and Stotts, you know, kind of working a bit of his magic a little bit and working in guys like Mo Harkless and Aminu at the stretch four and kind of staggering those minutes with CJ and Dame in the backcourt. I mean, the resilience of this team has been impressive. And after the game on Wednesday night, I was listening. I actually heard it in the car. I was listening on the radio. I heard Pat Connaughton do the post-game interview with Brian Wheeler. And this is the 13th, 14th, 15th man on the roster talking here, and he couldn't stop referencing, you know, the camaraderie that the guys had, the chemistry that the guys had. And a number of points in the interview, he referred to his teammates as brothers instead of teammates. And I think that kind of speaks, you know, really, you know, kind of volumes about the chemistry that these guys do have. And then they played the television interview with Damian Lillard on the radio. And again, he was saying, you know, these are my boys. Like, we trust in each other. Everybody's saying Dame, you know, is the unequivocal leader. Everybody's got their faith in Dame. Everybody seems to trust Stotts. There's a real chemistry and a real camaraderie here. Now, contrasting that with the Clippers, you know, you have that game in the past against the Blazers, I believe last season, where DeAndre kind of screwed up that rebound at the last second. You have, you know, there's a gif that will go down in history of Chris Paul jumping up and down, screaming at DeAndre Jordan to put the ball up. I mean, you could tell that there were chemistry issues there. You had DeAndre Jordan actually, you know, the whole fiasco this summer with the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, does he want to be in Los Angeles? Does he not want to be there? Questions about the chemistry. Blake Griffin punching training staff in the face, you know, making him miss, what, 35 games at some point in the season, to go on top of the, I believe it's a leg injury that he had, as well as that hand injury that he had from punching the equipment manager. I mean, it seems to me that if we're talking about intangibles, you know, Brandon, you mentioned this earlier, the Blazers seem to have that in spades, and chemistry, you know, seems to be something that, you know, or lack thereof, seems to be something that has plagued the Los Angeles Clippers for the last several years.
Yeah, and I think you did a great job of describing that, because it can be kind of hard to package that into a box, because, you know, we call them intangibles for a reason. They're either impossible to measure or tough to measure, but you're absolutely right. And by the way, that that whole saga with DeAndre Jordan, for someone like me who spends a lot of time on Twitter during the offseason, not a whole lot going on, that was just pure classic drama. That was, I want every summer to be filled with something like that, so long as it doesn't involve Blazers players. But yeah, no, I mean, the Blazers play together. It's top to bottom. And the thing that I would like to maybe take a closer look into at some point is the relationship between Damian Lillard and Terry Stotts. Because they both, I mean, when Terry Stotts was first hired by the Blazers, one of the first things that he did in his office was put up this poster of Jack Ramsey. You know, I've spoken about it on the podcast before. It's a quote that the team that plays together is going to beat the team with more talent that doesn't play together, you know, roughly paraphrased. That, to a T, is this matchup. The Clippers have more talent. They look better on paper, but the Blazers play together more. When the chips are down, like if you were in an adverse situation, like let's say that you're like hiking, it starts raining, you know, you go into a cave to stay dry, all of a sudden you hear the growl of a bear. Who do you want behind you? Do you want the Clippers behind you or the Blazers behind you? I want the Blazers behind me. I think that's a perfect analogy for this. And seriously, you could not have two more contrasting teams unless it were perhaps the Rockets.
Yeah, if you're hiking in Oregon and it starts to rain on you and you decide to take shelter, you should probably reconsider whether or not you want to go hiking in Oregon or not. that's besides the point, though. Evans, I want to kind of toss this to you. You know, we talked a lot about the intangibles of both teams. Is this something that you could see actually, you know, making a difference in this series and potentially swinging the favor of this series toward the Blazers?
I mean, maybe. I mean, if you look at it from the context of, like, we've seen the Clippers before get a little bit overconfident in the playoffs. Like, I think that's what the problem was when they were up 3-1 on Houston, was they figured, you know, we got this in the bag. Let's just rest up for Golden State in the next round. And they just lost track of that series. So there's definitely a chance that, you know, if the Clippers get up in this series 2-1 or 3-1 or what have you, that they kind of let off the gas pedal a little bit and let the Blazers back in. That could happen. At the same time, I think the Clippers learned a little bit from their collapse last season, and I think they know better to let it happen again. So I can kind of see both sides of it. I do think that there's a lot to this idea that the Blazers are the more mentally tough team, they're the more cohesive group. But I also think that Chris Paul's really good, and he knows how to lead this team in times of need. I think that you have to trust his decision-making skills and his leadership in a big moment, because he's been through these moments before and a lot of the Blazers haven't. So I can kind of see both sides of it. But I do think that the intangibles will help the Blazers a little bit, just because, as you guys have said, they're a team that plays together really well.
And just to quickly shine a light on this Chris Paul-Damian Lillard matchup, just want to pump an article by our own Eric Griffith came out today on the 14th. It's called Chris Paul versus Damian Lillard. The showdown is here. I mean, the too long didn't read, even though you absolutely should read it. It's awesome. It has videos, everything. But basically, Damian Lillard's career against Chris Paul has been terrible. Across the board, terrible. I mean, the scoring discrepancy, the assist discrepancy, it's not good. And I wonder if we're gonna talk about intangibles, I do wonder someone like Damian Lillard, who, like a lot of players, like this Blazers team, as a group this year, and as we've seen in Blazers in years past, particularly Wesley Matthews, Damian Lillard kind of takes pleasure in the perceived slight, right? He takes pleasure in knowing that other people don't believe in him or don't doubt him or doubt him. You know what I mean? And so I wonder if Damian Lillard is looking at the way he's played against Chris Paul and saying to himself, this is really my time to show people that I've arrived on the national stage, that, you know, that Damian Lillard is worthy of being in the conversation in the same breath as a player like Chris Paul. It would be very, very interesting to see if Damian Lillard takes this as a personal challenge. But that's a little bit antithetical to how the Blazers play as a team. But still, I think it's something to watch.
I mean, Dame is obviously taking this as a personal challenge. I mean, a team challenge as well. But, you know, individually, you see him go up against opposing all-star point guards. You see him, you know, do his best to bring it every time. You know, when he goes up against the Chris Pauls of the world, the Steph Currys, the Kyle Lowrys, you know, got the big name point guards. He does take these matchups very seriously. So there's no doubt in my mind that he's looking at this, you know, as an incredibly important matchup. And there's no doubt that he absolutely wants to win it. But I don't know. I think it's probably safe to go off the presumption that history at this point is going to hold true. I think the Clippers have taken 9 out of the last of the 12 games that Dame has played against them. His shooting percentages are in the tank against them, both from outside and at the rim. Assists are down, points are down, efficiency is down across the board. He's only had one or two big games. I mean, there's only a couple wins there. I mean, it's a difficult matchup for Dame, you know, top to bottom. And like Brandon said, check out that article by Eric Griffith if you want to get, you know, the nuts and bolts of that. But let's kind of assume that Dame plays either, you know, at his averages or below his averages. Because it would be, to me, it would be interesting if somebody were to predict Damian to really play above his averages this series. So let's just assume that it's going to be average or below. You know, what else has to happen for the Blazers in this series in order to make it competitive with the Clippers? I mean, who else in this lineup can really step up against the Clippers?
I look defensively first more than offensively. I think the biggest question for me is, how do you match up with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan? Because, I mean, when they start those two massive dudes in their starting lineup, you got to have two massive dudes to match up with them back. And the Blazers lately have been starting, you know, Mason Plumlee and Mo Harkless. And I love the Plumlee-Harkless lineup. I think it's the best lineup they have. I've written this before. But I also think that in certain matchups, such as this one, it can be trouble. I mean, Harkless against Blake Griffin is going to be a monster matchup for the Clippers. I think that, I mean, Blake Griffin has evolved so much as a player that he's no longer just a threat to pick and roll and go to the rim and dunk. He's a threat to do so many other things too. He can work from the elbow and, you know, pick and pop and pass out to a teammate. He can drive. He can hit the 18-foot jumper. He can do so many things with the ball in his hands. You really have to be ready for the full range of his skills. And I don't know if Harkless is ready for that. I don't know who else is ready for that off the bench. I mean, you look at Ed Davis. You look at, you know, the fossilizing Chris Kaman. I don't know who they have that can step up and control that matchup. It's going to be tough for him. So the biggest question for me is who steps up and matches up with the two big guys in the middle for the Clippers.
Well, if I can just slide in there real quick and say that Blake Griffin has not looked the same at all since he's come back from that hand and hamstring injury. I mean, there are reports that his hamstring injury has not healed and will not heal until he gets an offseason to rest it. When you watch him play, I mean, the games I've seen him play, he's looked slow. He hasn't had that same explosiveness. I think that I read he's only had 2 dunks since he's come back. So when you're talking about a smaller lineup, I don't know if Blake Griffin is that threat in the pick and roll to dunk or off the drive that he generally is. And so it's possible that that's not going to be as big of a problem for the Blazers as it would be most years, because he does seem limited.
Yeah, I'm looking at the last five games for the Clippers heading into the playoffs, Blake Griffin played in three of them. He took about a dozen field goal attempts, hit about 45% of them, scored 14 points, 8.7 rebounds, and 4.7 assists to 2.3 turnovers in those three games. I mean, this isn't miserable, you know, basketball the way that he's playing. I mean, it's certainly not the Blake Griffin of the postseason in 2015 when he was putting up something like 26, 12, and 6 on like 50% shooting or something crazy like that. I mean, he entirely stepped it up last postseason, and this is something that Clippers fans seem to be banking on from what I've read, is that, you know, he hasn't looked his normal self, since he's come back, you know, to play the last several games heading into the postseason. But he's a guy who can take it up a notch. I mean, are these injury issues going to be something that's going to slow him down? I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, not to harp on this point too much, but since he's come back from that hand and hamstring injury, he has been limited. His point totals are down. His minutes are down. And I mean, you could argue that the Clippers are trying to bring him back slow so that he can be fresher for the playoffs. But again, like I said earlier, I've seen him play. He looks a little bit limited. I don't expect that he's going to be at 100% for this series at all.
Yeah, he's had a couple okay games, which maybe brought, you know, some of the statistics up that I referenced. And then he had a couple bad games as well. So if you look at it's kind of rocky for him the last several games. And obviously, if you do go by just an eyeball test, I mean, he hasn't looked the same either. So Blake Griffin is gonna play a huge, you know, role in swinging this series. And I just personally wonder. I don't know. We're not gonna know until the ball goes up on Sunday night and the, you know, the two teams start playing. We're not gonna know how Blake Griffin's gonna look. So, you know, I guess we're just wondering here, how does he get contained, you know, by the Blazers? Because even if he's not his normal athletic self, you know, rolling to the rim, dominating in the pick and roll, and getting a ton of dunks, I mean, he has expanded his game a little bit to the mid range. He's an effective shooter from there. You know, Chris Paul can create all kinds of penetration against the Blazers, you know, forcing the defense to collapse. The Blazers have to go, you know, they either have to go small against Blake Griffin, or they're going to have to put someone on him, you know, like Mace or Ed Davis, who don't necessarily defend super well away from the rim. So I think regardless of if, you know, Blake Griffin is hampered or not, and if he's seriously hampered, I mean, I guess this is going to play a big difference. But if it's the difference between him being a little bit hampered or not, you know, I think that he's going to be able to find holes in the Blazers defense to be able to exploit.
Yeah, and the other problem with Blake Griffin is he's a pretty capable passer too. So, I mean, even if the Blazers were to throw a double at him, and his handles aren't super, super terrible either, he's been able to pass out of that. He has shooters around him. I mean, J.J. Redick is like a 7,000% three-point shooter, so that's not good. Yeah, that matchup definitely presents some problems. And I don't really have a great answer for you on that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I've watched a little bit of Blake the last few games. He's kind of looked like a second point guard out there on the floor. Kind of reminds me of Draymond Green on the Warriors, the way you can give him the ball at the top of the key and he can kind of create for himself without even having a traditional point guard like Chris Paul to help. I mean, the way he can just dish to a teammate and then make a pin down screen and create an open jump shot for him really easily. There's a lot of things he can do even when he's limited. He's a really smart and resourceful player that even if he's not physically at his best, he can still find ways to contribute. So yeah, I mean, I think that Blake's going to be scary no matter what, but it would definitely help Blazers if he weren't 100%.
So I mean, maybe they take this as like a Willis Reed moment. Do you think Blake Griffin's going to come out wrapped up in like ace wrap, kind of hobble out there, have the crowd just cheer him on?
Or, I believe you mean a Paul Pierce in the 2008 finals moment. That's what it's called.
But, or Brandon Roy in 2009, right? Against the Phoenix Suns 7 days after surgery. Was that the year?
Yeah. I mean, you guys probably both know Brandon Roy was on a podcast recently with J.J. Redick on on the Vertical podcast. And actually J.J. Redick is a pretty good interviewer too. Not to say too many good things about the Clippers, but yeah. And one thing Brandon Roy said was, you know, you want to do everything you can to help your team win. And when you're limited like that, if you are compensating in some way, shape or form, are you going to hurt yourself even more? Or even if you don't hurt yourself more, is your kind of being limited going to hurt your team, even though you want to help? I mean, these are considerations the Clippers are going to have to make.
Oh, I think they're going to pull out all the stops. I think this offseason, this postseason. I just see the way that their last three seasons have ended. In the second round and last year in such difficult fashion for fans, you know, being up 3-1 against the Houston Rockets. That was difficult. And, you know, Chris Paul, while he is still just as effective, you know, as his career averages this, you know, the last couple seasons, he still seems to be in his prime as a player at the age of 30, even with some of the injury issues he's had over his career. He is now on the other side of 30. And like we've talked about on the podcast a number of times, you know, guys, you know, definitely start to decline. And point guard, if you're kind of one of those point guards who, you know, a big part of your game is defense, the way that, you know, Chris Paul's is, he's an all NBA defensive team guy, you know, like that's going to begin. He's not going to be as effective on defense. So he's not going to be as effective overall as a player. You know, that might be one of the first things to go. He's always going to have his passing and his shooting, but in terms of penetrating and being able to create for teammates, you know, that's going to diminish. And I think that's a real concern, not only to Chris, but to that franchise and his teammates as well.
I think it's important to note here that Chris Paul had a strained hamstring last year in the playoffs, and he still single-handedly beat the Spurs anyway. So, like, he has a history of playing through these things because he's a really, really tough dude. But, I mean, having said that, you're right. It could hamper him a little bit defensively.
I was just going to say that, I mean, Eric Griffith's article brought up the point, too, that Chris Paul is super, super strong. I mean, that's helpful. Even if you are kind of limited mobility-wise, if you can hold your ground, that's super helpful.
Well, what I mean to say is with Chris Paul is that he's you know, he's 30 years old now. He's been in the league, you know, what, a dozen seasons. He's going to be exiting his prime. So I think the urgency is going to be there for him this offseason to really not lose in the first round against a team where they, on paper, overmatch the Blazers. I think he's going to be incredibly motivated to make it happen this year because it's only going to be downhill in terms of the way that he's able to affect the game with his athleticism going forward. And I think that's definitely something that's, you know, I definitely see Chris Paul cranking it up to 11 for this series, no matter what.
Yeah, I think the whole team is going to. I mean, we've heard little hints from Doc here and there that if they don't make a run this postseason, they might blow it up. I think Doc is losing patience with this group. And, you know, maybe they try to trade Blake Griffin. Maybe they try to trade DeAndre Jordan. I mean, I think there's big changes coming if the Clippers don't make a run this postseason. And if they lose to the Blazers in the first round, I mean, it's going to be an epic meltdown in their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, and I just one more quick thing about the Clippers this year, maybe compared to years past or last year, they had absolutely positively no bench. I mean, they were playing, what, seven-man rotations?
And one was Austin Rivers, yes.
And so now, I mean, they've added some pieces. You know, the ghost of Paul Pierce can be useful at times. Other players come to mind. But one more quick thing, too. I mean, when Blake Griffin was out, you saw how much more of a load Chris Paul took, and he managed the team effectively. I can't pull their record off the top of my head without Blake Griffin, but clearly the Clippers did quite well for themselves, separating themselves as one of the top teams in the West. I mean, Chris, you talked earlier about that disparity between the number four seed and number five seed. I mean, the gulf is pretty wide there. I mean, when you're missing a player who averages 20 points and 8 boards and 5 assists as Blake Griffin was, you would imagine that maybe they wouldn't be doing so well, but a lot of that, you know, not only treading water but succeeding was Chris Paul. So yeah, I could definitely see him turning it up for the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, and I think the Clippers were really good at kind of adapting without Blake Griffin. First of all, they had the redundancy of having a second dominant big man in DeAndre Jordan, who's not the same player as Blake. He's more of an around the rim guy than a perimeter guy, but they went to him a lot more on pick and rolls, and they made a lot of things happen with him. And also, they went smaller with a lot of lineups that played either Mbah Mute or Paul Pierce at the four. And then that gives you a little element of, you know, whether it's floor spacing with Pierce or kind of a good cutter in Mbah Mute. So the Clippers have other ways to beat you without Blake being 100%. But they definitely need to have Blake at his best for the playoffs to be really at their best against the Blazers.
You know, looking at the Clippers rotation, and you mentioned, Brandon, last year, they really, the last several seasons, they've really had nothing coming off the bench. This year, you know, in the absence of Blake Griffin, Cole Aldrich became a useful NBA player. There was some addition by subtraction by getting rid of Josh Smith and Lance Stephenson midseason. That helped the rotation, believe it or not. You know, Austin Rivers has played a little bit more consistently than I personally thought he. I didn't know if he was going to be an NBA player past his rookie contract after his first two seasons. So he's shown to be, you know, at times a very useful player for his dad. You know, coming off the bench.
Nepotism's great.
you have a couple, you know, guys. You know, Jeff Green. Coming in, he can stretch the floor out a little bit at the four that can kind of, you know, throw some guys to counter that Blazers small lineup. It's not like they don't have anybody who can match that. You know, you can have Jeff Green at the four. You can shift Blake to the five, or you can leave DeAndre out there at the five. You know, and Bamute got a lot of time starting. Wesley Johnson got a lot of time in and out of the starting lineup. That's not even to mention Jamal Crawford, a guy that has historically completely torched the Blazers coming off the bench for the Clippers. So, I mean, they definitely have a reserve unit this season compared to years past.
Yeah, and I was about to say, how have we gone this whole time not mentioning Jamal Crawford? You just did it. And, I mean, Jamal Crawford has done really, really well against the Blazers. But, I mean, that's one thing that I think about. If it's a close game, right, I mean, you think about if the Clippers need a shot to you know, they need a productive possession in order to keep the game going, in order to hold a lead. Those are shots that Jamal Crawford takes quite often, but he is super duper streaky. I mean, streakier than the streakiest non-name brand Windex window cleaner that you've ever used. But he has done super well against the Blazers. I mean, is that going to continue? I don't know, but Jamal Crawford.
Let me give you a really, really super hot take. If I could trade Allen Crabbe for Jamal Crawford right now, I would say no. I think the Blazers are just fine with their own perimeter guys. I would much rather have McCollum, Lillard, Crabbe, Gerald Henderson than everybody else the Clippers have after Chris Paul. I think they're going to be fine in terms of the matchup they have on the perimeter. I think the bigger question is what do you do about DeAndre and Blake? But Jamal Crawford is a good player. He doesn't scare me. I think Allen Crabbe's got every bit of game he has.
Yeah, I definitely think Allen Crabbe is to Jamal Crawford what Jerry Stackhouse is to Jamal Mashburn.
Oh my God. Whoa. Solid references there. Looking at this Clippers front court that you brought up, Evans, I mean, it's massive. There's a lot of size. And like I mentioned, Cole Aldrich has actually, you know, looked all right in the absence of Blake Griffin. You know, there's actually a rotation there. They, you know, like we mentioned, they can bring Jeff Green, you know, up to the four and kind of match the Blazers' small lineups here. So, you know, what happens if they're able to use that lineup, the big lineup, you know, to their advantage against the Blazers? I was kind of thinking a parallel would have been a couple years ago in the playoffs against the Rockets when Dwight Howard was kind of torching Robin Lopez and Terry Stotts refused to double team. And it ended up in Dwight Howard taking up a ton of time in their possessions for the Houston Rockets. It kind of brought, to be completely honest, it looked like it brought James Harden out of the game a little bit because he likes to have the ball in his hands. And having a guy like Dwight, even though he was torching the Blazers for something like 30, 32 points a game those first couple games, the Blazers ended up winning because he was taking a bunch of time on the possessions and not getting his teammates involved. Now, the thing I'm looking at that I'm kind of worried at is that DeAndre isn't necessarily, and same with Blake Griffin, they don't need to have the ball dumped into them on the block and they don't have to back it down and they don't take up a ton of time to get their points. They do a lot of their damage in the pick and roll with Chris Paul. And so in that sense, everybody still is getting involved and everybody's still able to be effective. So I don't know how the Blazers are going to match against those guys if the pick and roll is running optimally for the Clippers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that the biggest advantage the Clippers have is that Chris Paul is such a good game manager. He can control the flow and the tempo of the game by just the way he runs their pick and roll offense. If they need to hurry up and get a quick bucket, he can do that. If they need to drain 24 seconds off the clock and get, you know, a J.J. Redick three with 2 seconds left in the shot clock, they can do it that way too. They're a really versatile team offensively. They can beat you fast or slow. And that's one thing that the Rockets didn't have with Dwight Howard. It was a very one-dimensional, throw it into Dwight and watch him go to work kind of offense. The Clippers are different. They're really tough to game plan for because they can really beat you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I just wanted to really quickly fold in a listener question. I want to throw this to Evans. This question comes from Twitter, from RipCitizen_NBA. And they qualify this question by saying non-prominent players only. But they ask, who in your mind is going to be the Blazer killer in this series? And who is going to be the Clipper killer in this series? Again, they say non-prominent players only. Does anyone come to mind?
I got to pick a non-prominent player. Wow. I mean, I don't know. I don't really see Jeff Green torching the Blazers. I don't really... I mean, it depends on how we define non-prominent. I think J.J. Redick is a star shooting guard. He's one of the top 5 to 8 shooting guards in the league. But if he's a non-prominent player that can go off, if that counts, I mean, Redick could definitely have one of those games where he hits 7 threes and beats you single-handedly. That could happen. I don't really fear anybody on the Clipper bench. I mean, I don't think that... I mean, maybe Paul Pierce could step up and hit a dramatic, you know, game-winning three at the buzzer to beat them one game. He did it to the Hawks last year. But I don't think there's anybody that's going to just, you know, torch you all night long off the bench for the Clippers, really. But there's guys that can step up and have, like, great individual moments, like Pierce hitting a shot, for example, or maybe Jeff Green having some crazy breakaway dunk. I don't know.
Well, and I'm thinking on the Blazers side, last year, I mean, you saw two players really kind of increase their value pretty dramatically just because of that one series against Memphis, Myers Leonard and CJ McCollum. Do you see anyone on the Blazers this year where they could do the same thing, where you really look at them and go, wow, they really stepped into their own during this particular playoff series? Or is there just no one like that left at this point?
I mean, again, it depends on how you define that, because I don't think Alan Crabb really needs to increase his value much. He's already increased it pretty much. I think Crabb's a $12 million player right now. There's nobody that's quite on the same level as the guys that the Blazers had last year, because there's no... you know, Wesley Matthews, Nick Batum, Marcus Aldridge blocking him on the depth chart this year, so it's a totally different dynamic. I think we all know what Alan Crabb can do. I think we all know what Gerald Henderson can do. There's no, like, young guy ready to break out in that same way. I don't think Noah Vonleh is going to jump off the bench and have a big game, really. It's not something I foresee happening. So it's not really the same as it was last year.
So one thing the Clippers do, Doc Rivers and the Clippers kind of do sometimes, is run three-guard lineups. And that could be with Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, any number of those guys, you know, three of them on the floor at the same time. Under those circumstances, I could see a guy like Gerald Henderson or Alan Crabb, you know, a bit bigger of a wing, a bit more physical of a wing, particularly Gerald Henderson, who's able to take guys off the dribble, has kind of a sneaky backdoor move. Same could be said for Alan Crabb. You can catch a guy like J.J. Redick sleeping on defense. You can catch a guy like Jamal Crawford sleeping on defense. Austin Rivers, the same could be said for him. You know, of those four backcourt players, Chris Paul certainly is an elite defensive point guard. If I'm looking at the other three, those are all guys that you can take advantage of with a bigger, stronger, more physical wing like Gerald Henderson, and to a certain extent, Alan Crabb.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, because I think when Henderson's on the floor, the Clippers are going to usually be hiding their worst defensive player on him, which means a lot of Austin Rivers guarding Henderson. And Henderson likes to post up against smaller guards like that. I think he could actually get a lot of points. You know, when we're looking at, like, bench against bench minutes in the second quarter, we could see Henderson go off a little bit against the Austin Riverses of the world.
Yeah, if Henderson's hitting that mid-range jumper, which at times can be hot and cold, but I think down the stretch of the season, it looked pretty good as he, you know, fully recovered from that hip surgery this past offseason. I mean, I think that's something that Terry Stotts is going to probably go to quite a bit off the bench if he's not being able to generate offense. You know, if Chris Paul is shutting down Damian Lillard, if CJ is having a tough time creating, if the Blazers' stretch bigs are having a tough time, you know, scoring against DeAndre and Blake Griffin and Aldridge, I absolutely think Gerald Henderson could swing the balance of a game or two in this series.
Yeah, and just looking at it defensively, I mean, Evans, you mentioned Noah Vonleh earlier. I actually think that he could make a difference defensively. I mean, when you watch Noah Vonleh play, he's pretty mobile. He's super, super young, so there's a lot of kind of the ins and outs of how to play defense that he doesn't have quite locked down yet. But I think if the Blazers do make it a point of emphasis with him, if they say, look, Noah, we don't have Myers, right? We have Ed Davis, Mason Plumlee, and you, and Chris Kaman. If they make it a point of emphasis, I could see him helping on defense more than he has kind of on the whole this season.
Yeah, with Leonard out, Noah Vonleh could certainly be really important to these Blazers. And if Blake Griffin you know, is able to affect the game in different ways. I mean, the way that he can get, you know, his back to the basket, the way that he can finish in the pick and roll, and the way that he can now stretch the floor out to the mid range. You know, you might see lineups where you need a guy like Noah Vonleh out there who has that kind of length, but still the ability to get out a little bit on the perimeter and play some defense. So, you know, I could see him potentially, you know, getting a handful of minutes on the defensive end and affecting a game. And another guy I'm looking at to kind of wrap up this user question here, or this listener question, is Ed Davis. I mean, if you look at the work that he was able to do against the Clippers this year, he destroyed them on the offensive glass. Now, granted, a few of those games, Blake Griffin wasn't, you know, playing, or he wasn't necessarily healthy, you know, but Ed Davis's tenacity on the boards is something that the Clippers are likely going to struggle with this series.
Yeah, I mean, and you had Ed Davis say explicitly that he's looking forward to this series. I think that he said even a couple games ago that he was one of the only Blazers to kind of say outright, yes, we would prefer to get the fifth seed to face the Clippers. And then what was it, either yesterday or today, he made some comments about like the series could get ugly. I don't think that means that Ed Davis is interested in hurting anybody, but what I do think it means is that he understands kind of what the Clippers bring as far as they're big men. And I think that he's up to that challenge. It'll be really interesting to see how he takes advantage of that, especially considering when you look at how well Ed Davis has played against the Clippers this year. I mean, again, to go back to Dave Deckard's article from a little bit ago, Ed Davis is scoring, you know, more than twice his season average against the Clippers. He's rebounding at an insane rate. I mean, getting 12 boards, 6 offensive boards a game in those games he's played against the Clippers this year. So maybe this is a matchup that Ed Davis in particular will relish. It will be interesting to see how he plays it.
I got a fun stat for you. Guess where the Clippers rank in the NBA in percentage of their shots they've taken within 3 feet of the rim?
Oh, it's got to be high. Number one?
No, they're dead last.
What?
I just checked
with all those pick and rolls?
Yeah, but they don't get to the rim. I mean, DeAndre does, but the rest of them don't. They're more of a jump shooting team. And I think Ed Davis is looking at that, and he's ready to feast on these guys because he's one of the best around-the-rim players in the league. It's an underrated thing about his game is how good he is around the basket. So I think that's the kind of thing that Ed Davis is looking forward to. He's looking at a team that he can dominate in the paint. So I definitely see where he's coming from with that.
You know, if the Blazers can play solid perimeter D, you have J.J. Redick, who is, you know, top three, I think, in percentage this year in terms of three-point percentage. You have Chris Paul at 37%. Excuse me. After that, nobody else on that team is an above average outside shooter, but they do take a lot of outside shots. So they're, you know, if the Blazers backcourt defensively and the wings have their head screwed on right, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, if these guys stay true to their averages against the Blazers backcourt, Ed Davis is going to have a lot of potential rebounds. He's going to be able to gobble up on the defensive end, you know, on the offensive end as well. You know, you mentioned that, the Clippers don't necessarily play super close to the basket other than DeAndre and Blake Griffin. I mean, Mason Plumlee is another guy. You know, he's going to have size disadvantages against a lot of the lineups that the Clippers are going to be able to put out there. But his passing ability is going to be able to shine against guys who can't get out on him. Ed Davis is going to be able to, you know, work his magic on the offensive boards, I imagine. You know, guys like Noah Vonleh could get out there, stretch the offense a little bit. I mean, I don't expect Stotts to play him heavy minutes in the postseason. But as a change of pace player, I mean, if Blake Griffin's not 100%, that really does, you know, change a lot of what Stotts is going to do. And I want to, you know, I want to wrap this conversation talking about Stotts and Doc Rivers. You know, Evans, if you're looking at this matchup and you're looking at the history, there's a lot of, you know, the media is reporting on a lot of beef. I'm not sure if it's authentic between the two coaches. You know, there's a lot of back and forth about what happened with Doc Rivers not allowing CJ to play with that clerical error. I read on a Clippers blog today that was actually not Doc Rivers' decision. And so that beef was all just completely a fabrication of the media. You know, you have the hack of DeAndre. You have that. You know, the method that Stotts employed against the Clippers earlier on in the season where he shot, 36 free throws and missed 22 of them, an NBA record 22 or something. which, you know, rubbed the Clippers and Doc the wrong way, you know, reportedly. You have that preseason game where things got a little bit, you know, feisty, a lot more physical than you would anticipate a preseason game getting, that the Clippers were able to come back and beat the Blazers in pretty dramatic fashion, kind of left a bad taste in Dame and a number of his teammates' mouths. You know, so there is some, at least reportedly, there's some bad blood, you know, between the teams and the coaching staff, a little bit of a beef here. So what do you think Terry Stotts, do you think he's going to pull out anything unorthodox against Doc Rivers? Do you think he's got any tricks up his sleeve? Do you think he's going to go to the hack of DeAndre maybe at the end of, you know, first, second, and third quarters as well as the fourth? How do you think this could potentially play out, these two coaches matching up as well as the teams?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, any reports of any beef between Terry Stotts and anybody, Soyberger at best, he doesn't have beef. He's such a nice guy. Come on.
Perfect.
Having said that, I do think there's going to be an interesting chess match adjustment-wise between Terry Stotts and Doc Rivers, because you have these two teams that are both capable of going big or going small, right? And it's a lot of, you know, I make a move, you counter move, you counter my counter move. And I'm interested in who gets the last laugh there, because I think that, you know, the Blazers are going to start probably with their traditional lineup of Harkless and Plumlee starting up front, and the Clippers are going to have a lot of size to match up with that. You know, who goes to their bench first for a big? Is it going to be Ed Davis matching up with DeAndre? You know, if Ed Davis comes into the Clippers counter by going small with Jeff Green, there's going to be a lot of matchups going back and forth, and it's going to be interesting to see who can kind of outfox the other team's matchup, I guess mismatches, I would say. So that's interesting. And also, the hack of DeAndre thing is another interesting thing to talk about, because I think that there's a lot of times where it hurts you more than it helps. I mean, even somebody as bad as DeAndre Jordan at the free throw line can you know, make 50 or 60% of them a lot of the time, and that's enough to get passable NBA offense if you're scoring, you know, 100 to 110 points per 100 possessions. So I think that a lot of times you're hurting yourself when you hack guys, but also it's a way to control the clock. It's a way to throw off a team's rhythm. There are a lot of intangible things that you can do with the hack of strategy that can help in certain spots. And I think that Terry might pull it out in certain situations. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the hack of strategy is probably a little less effective just to try to get back into a game. And it's probably more effective if the other team has gotten into some kind of an offensive rhythm or an offensive flow that you're trying to disrupt. I mean, that's what you just said, but I think that's probably where Stotts is going to pull that out. And historically, you can both correct me if I'm wrong, Stotts is not necessarily the most creative coach in the world. I mean, from year to year, he's shown that he can be adaptive, which is good. I mean, he's maximized the potential of a lot of different interesting lineups. But as far as kind of being creative from game to game, I mean, that isn't necessarily something that I have seen. Evans, maybe you have something to add to that.
Well, I was just going to say, I just double-checked DeAndre's free throw percentage, and it's actually 43% this season. So I take it back. Everything I said, I'm a moron. They should definitely foul in every single time. End of conversation.
Well, no, I mean,
what were you saying?
No, I mean, just to go back to that point, you mentioned it. If you give even a bad free throw shooter enough times at the line, right, they're setting up the line again and again, they can get into rhythm themselves.
And you also have to make your own shots on the offensive end if you're going to employ that strategy, because that allows the opposing defense to set up against you, because you're stopping the clock and allowing them to get back. So you're going to have to be able to run your own set offense if you're going to foul them and put them at the line. So it certainly disrupts the flow of the game. And Brandon, like you said, I think it's more or less that's the key there, is to disrupt the flow of the game. If Chris Paul is torching the Blazers, if Jamal Crawford is torching the Blazers' backcourt, if Blake Griffin is going off, if Paul Pierce, like he did, I think it was that preseason game I referenced, if he decides to dust it off and he's able to hit four threes in a row like he did back in October against the Blazers, that's when you go to the hack of DeAndre, right? That's when you disrupt the flow of their offense. That's when you start to mess things up for him.
Well, and talk about Paul Pierce, you look at the Blazers and the Clippers schedule. So the first game is, you know, this Sunday, the 17th. Then they play Wednesday. Then they play Saturday. So, and then the fourth game is on a Monday. But those first three games, I mean, that's quite a bit of space in between games, quite a bit of rest for players that might need it. I think that's probably going to disproportionately help the Clippers, given, you know, Paul Pierce's age, like you said, and given Blake Griffin's injury. I mean, you could also argue it could help Damian Lillard's been kind of nursing a nagging foot injury. So, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Terry Stotts could also dust the old caveman off the bench.
Yes.
Give him 10 to 15 minutes a night if he's going to be getting, you know, if he's going to be getting a handful of minutes and he's going to be getting three days off of rest in between games, we could see him against some of those huge lineups.
I would pay money to see Chris Kamen put Blake Griffin in the old Kamen spin cycle. Please, 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 please.
I don't necessarily see that happening, but you know, who knows? You know, you question Terry Stotts' creativity. He may pull out, you know, some of the tricks out of his bag and bring Chris Kamen out of his. Geez, when was the last time he played meaningful minutes for the Blazers?
It was last year, for sure.
A season ago.
Last year, yeah.
So if that happens, that would certainly be an interesting surprise for us to see. We're going to jump off here, but I want to ask you guys, you know, real quick about your gut feelings and your instincts heading into this conversation, into this, you know, matchup with the Clippers. Brandon, you felt like the Blazers had a chance, you know, in your gut going into this series. Evans, you kind of, you know, felt you were kind of going more towards the more popular opinion here.
They got a chance.
More towards, you know, saying, yeah, Clippers in 5, 6, or 7, something along those lines. That's kind of what a lot of people are saying, and justifiably so. Have either of you, you know, from the course of this conversation, have you swung in any direction in this? Or are you both feeling similarly to how you felt before?
You know, I'm feeling pretty similar to how I felt before, but I definitely appreciate hearing all the different ways in which the Blazers are going to have to be mindful that they are playing a better team, right? And it's interesting because part of being a lower seed, you kind of get that we're the underdog. And I talked about that earlier, the Blazers and, you know, Damian Lillard kind of thrive on that. But there are also reports coming out that apparently the Clippers, maybe Chris, as you said, to avoid falling in that trap that they did last year, the Clippers are telling themselves in local media in LA that they consider themselves to be the underdog. So I don't know if there's a psychological advantage one way or the other, but I would have to say through the course of this conversation, Blazers in 7 still. I'm going to stick with that.
I'll stick with Clippers in 6.
All right. Yeah. It's going to be a pretty banana series. I mean, if all the injury questions that we have about specific guys, if they're able to play through those injuries, this is going to be an absolutely banana series for fans to watch of both teams. And it's going to be, you know, interesting to see the adjustments that Terry Stotts does or doesn't make and the adjustments that Doc Rivers does or doesn't make, because, you know, I think in the playoffs in the past, and this was something, you know, that happened against the Spurs in the second round a couple of years ago, against the Grizzlies last year, when Myers Leonard wasn't necessarily unleashed until game 3 or so. And same thing with CJ McCollum. You know, will Terry Stotts switch up the game plan as early as game 2 if things don't go right in game 1? That's kind of going to be one of my big questions heading into this series. How is he going to plan and counterplan for what Doc Rivers brings out in game 1? I think that's really going to set the tone for the series. What kind of adjustments the Blazers will need to make, if any at all, from game 2 going on? And personally, I think that's what's going to set the tone here.
Yeah, and part of the good news is that the Clippers aren't particularly creative themselves. They don't really have a lot of pieces they can kind of shift around. I mean, the Blazers are not playing the Spurs, they're not playing the Warriors, and thank goodness for that.
Yeah, so I guess the moral of the story there, Brandon, is, you know, against the Spurs a couple seasons ago, the Blazers may have been playing chess. This is a bit more of a game of checkers between Terry Stotts and Doc Rivers. So regardless, there's going to be a number of different adjustments that they make. It's going to be exciting to see. We have, by the time the next podcast comes out, we're going to have at least 2 to possibly 3 games to talk about. Evans, I want to say thank you so much for coming on this week, man. It's been a couple dozen episodes since we've had you. It's been great to have you back, man.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed doing it.
And we have come to the end of Blazers Edge Podcast, episode 129. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. I'd also like to thank Blazers Edge staff writer Evans Clinchy for coming on the show this week. You can also check out his work Fridays at BlazersEdge.com. He has an article this week that came out previewing the Clippers and the Blazers matchup. So check that out at BlazersEdge.com. Evans Clinchy was also the inaugural guest of Peter Sampson's new Blazers Edge radio show on 107.1 xray.fm. That comes out every Tuesday. It's live from the noon to the 1 o'clock hour. So if you want to catch that, again, that's Tuesday. Peter Sampson is hosting 12 o'clock live on xray.fm 107.1 in the Portland area.
Yeah, definitely. It's a dope show. I caught it live. It was great. And it's also cool because you can catch it after the fact. They keep those episodes stored. So definitely check that out. Our intro and outro music, as always, brought to you by Odar. You can check out his work at soundcloud.com/odarbeats. Be sure to tune in for the midweek Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Masons. And for Chris Lucia, I'm Brandon Goldner. And remember, bananas come from the equator, so you don't need to put them in the refrigerator.